And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The amazing, the colossal, the stupendous, the eighth wonder of the world. Main Street Mekkies! Hey everybody, how's it going? I am your co-host, your ghost host, Alex, here for another great week.
And I'm a disgruntled passenger on this cruise. I paid $8 for this, and I'm Noah.
I paid the Lightning Lane price.
I bought Lightning Lane for this? The backside? And this is Main Street Mekkies, the show where two hopeful Imagineers talk about Disney Imagineering and most likely a lot of other unrelated things along the way.
Yeah, yeah. That's
how's it
going?
You were just talking about a current issue in your living space right before we started.
We're not
recording.
Talking about this on the podcast.
You don't want to talk about that?
No.
You don't think it's going to show up?
Listen, listeners, I live by a field and it's now gotten cold. Which means I've had some visitors this week. But unlike the Disney form of these visitors, mine don't make dresses and help princesses to a ball. Mine raid my wife's clothing and try to live in it. And so, yes, I'm over here waging war on rodents, and I don't know if I'm winning or not.
Down with the rodents.
I'm about to get a cat. That's where I'm at. I'm not a cat person.
But you might become one,
thanks to
the mice.
One. Thanks.
All
yeah.
right.
Anyways, we don't need to talk about that. I have both headphones in, and I'm living in bliss.
Yay!
Kinda.
What are we talking about on this week's episode that will help distract you?
This week, we are talking about actually probably one of my favorite Disney subjects, period. We are talking about music. Disney music, specifically park and attraction music, and what Disney does to make it so amazing. I would say this is probably a lot of people's favorite like Disney thing that Disney does.
I think so, and it's probably because I don't think you can really go anywhere in a Disney park without hearing some kind of, you know, carefully constructed music. I think you'd be struggling if you wanted to find a perfectly silent area of the park. Which is intentional, and thankfully most of the music, you know, Small World withstanding, is good and pleasant to listen to.
Yeah, I'd agree. And it really does, it really brings you into the area. Like, I think the biggest thing for me is the music is probably the biggest holder of, like, park memories.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like, there are, I can think of vividly where certain music plays. I can almost like walk through those spaces in my mind, mostly Epcot, but
it's mostly
like that's there fair. Is it just specific kinds of music that I think a lot of people have. This just brings a smile to your face, reminds you of a certain spot. For me, sometimes you can even think of like special smells that come with those kind of areas and stuff like that. Like it's a very sensory loaded thing that Disney pumps into the park.
It is, and you've provided the perfect segue into this first thing I kind of wanted to talk about. So you think Disney... Huh?
Hold on, before we did that, we forgot again. In case this is the first episode you're listening to, Noah and I are two actual engineers that like talking about Disney and Disney Imagineering because we're nerds. And for whatever reason, we're into that kind of thing.
And that's the show. Leave 5 stars down below. Tell your friends. Thanks, everyone. No, but
we can't keep forgetting to do that.
We can't. We go into it going. Okay, so we got that covered. That's us. When you think Disney music, what is the first like area or ride or show or Disney soundtrack that comes to mind? Like, what's your favorite go-to Disney music memory?
So my favorite has always been the, I think it's technically called the Innovations soundtrack or Interventions.
Yeah.
Interventions.
Interventions, yeah.
The soundtrack that's played in Epcot Future World up until recent times since like I think the early 2000s.
Yeah.
If not like 2000.
Yeah.
It's that weird futuristic like 80s techno sci-fi like that whole thing going on that instantly like the moment that hits my ears My head goes immediately to walking into the main pavilion of Future World where the fountain's going, and you got pavilions around you, and Epcot balls right behind you, walking towards World Showcase. That is the first thing that pops into my head. It's just a super vivid song. Behind that very closely is the entirety of Animal Kingdom. Because Animal Kingdom has a fantastic soundtrack that just, in my opinion, is super Disney, but not like IP Disney.
Yeah. Like in the same way that like the Epcot music is very, it's Disney, but it's not, you know, movie Disney. It's not, you know, Sherman Brothers Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to my next point. So why do you think?
I gotta hear yours.
Oh, I guess that's
true. What's yours? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't want to think too hard about this. I think the first soundtrack that comes to my mind whenever I think Disney is actually Splash Mountain, however problematic that might be at this point.
Really?
Just like, and I have no clue why, but hearing the soundtrack for that ride, it sends me straight there. Like I'm on the log and I'm on the ride and I can like see everything, or I'm like just outside the ride and it's just getting started. I don't know why. That, and then the beginning of the old California Screamin' soundtrack. That thing.
I can't remember that one.
The dun 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 dun.
Oh, and you're coming around. Now,
yeah. That, and I think that's because of just like how exciting the beginning of that ride is, and the beginning of any roller coaster, just how well it builds the excitement and going into that launch, and you've got Neil Patrick Harris narrating the launch before it was Incredicoaster. Like that excitement, I think, is what makes me remember that so well. Because other than that, there's not a whole lot of theming on that ride, and then there's just a fun little rock and roll soundtrack that plays in the background. But for whatever reason, those two really stick out in my mind. And I want to talk about why. Because there are so many Disney soundtracks and ambiance tracks and whatever in all the rides and lands. Why do you think the Intervention soundtrack is the one that stuck with you the most of like all of the weird Disney like area tracks?
Honestly, it's hard to say. So like music and like psychology in music is not something I'm super versed in. Like I will be honest, this is probably my favorite Disney topic as well as the one that I am least qualified to like talk technically about.
Into the unknown.
I wish I could have had a little bit more time to, like, just full out dive into this topic, but the cards laid where they lied.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it just has to do with the park music is made in a way that it is not the forefront of your experience there, but it is constantly in the background. And mm-hmm. So it plays, it's almost like it plays to your subconscious mind, not your conscious mind. And so your conscious mind is experiencing what's around you, but in the background, it's literally like as if it's a movie soundtrack, mm-hmm. where you don't notice the, let me take Avengers, for example. Another Disney film that is, but very well known. If you play the Avengers theme song from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, especially like the kind of slowed down one that they did for Endgame, that's like really hard hitting.
Yeah.
It's instantly recognized, but that's playing through multiple portions of the movie, but it's not necessarily the forefront. Like when all the Avengers rush Thanos's army, it's playing, but that's not the thing you're necessarily like paying mm-hmm. attention to. It's like, it's almost kind of just like poking the dopamine receptors while you're watching everybody rush down. And so I think it's kind of the same thing. It's almost like treated like a movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
And so it plays in the background and kind of permeates into the scene without drawing your attention away from the visual aspect. And so when you have those memories, it's playing in those memories because it's like ingrained into it. And then the longer you spend and the more beloved the area is, the more it's going to kind of stick with you and that it's going to get cemented.
Yeah, I like how you phrased it, how it's kind of like it's not the focus, but it's in the background. So your brain combines that with the visual memory. It's almost like it takes less memory space for your brain to remember some sort of music track than it does to remember, you know, exactly what something looked like. So when you go back to think about that, your brain probably stored the sound, like the sounds you were hearing, and kind of, you know, estimated what everything looked like, because it's a lot harder to, you know, picture something exactly how it looked than it is to just remember a song.
Yeah.
And I definitely think you're spot on with the whole movie soundtrack thing, because I know, you know, Walt wanted the park to feel like you were stepping into a movie, and all of the views were carefully crafted. So, of course, the background music and the ambiance would be perfectly crafted as well. I like that. That makes sense. And I think, yeah, you're onto something with the whole, like, that being tied in with memories. Because I know, isn't smell really connected to memories? And then probably second to that would be sounds, just because they're easy to remember.
I mean, it sounds right. I'm not...
Hey.
I don't know for 100% certainty. I know smell is super tied to the... It's hippocampus that's memory, isn't it?
I think so. I'm don't cite us on this. No one cite us on this, but that sounds right. Are you looking it up?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool.
Okay, long-term memories are the hippocampus.
Okay.
So yeah, it would be... Yeah, very important in spatial processing and navigation. So, yeah. Like, walking your way through the park, hearing the music, these would all be things that would be greatly ingrained into that part of your brain.
And I'm sure there's also some connection with, like, kids learn things better if they learn them in song, and we're naturally wired to enjoy things that are musical in nature, but that connection seems, you know, beyond the scope of this podcast. We're just a couple of engineers.
I think there is something to that, though. Just the more sensory aspects that you add to a memory, and this is kind of part of where Disney's genius comes in, because I don't think park music has always been a thing. I don't think that.
I think you're right.
At least not as much as it is now. And yeah. So, like, adding those, because they already got the smells. I mean, you ask anybody to remember what the smell of the Main Street confectionery is, it's there. It's right there. And so, or the smell of Pirates of the Caribbean. So they got the smells rolling around, and they have all this. I mean, adding in that sound effect throughout the whole park, it just makes people remember things so much better. And that's kind of like Disney's big thing is right, it's they're making memories, and that it's the place where dreams come true, it's the place where you're gonna have, like, your big family, the things you're gonna talk about. I mean, just last episode, all of our favorite memories. And so by pumping in this sensory experience throughout the whole park, they're making it more likely that you're going to remember it.
That's
If you don't remember the vacation, why would you go back? It might not be intentional, because people just love it to begin with. I don't know if it's an intentional thing that they did of, like, oh, people are going to remember this, and then they're going to want to come back because they got all these memories of this place. Like, they're never going to forget this. Because, like, I have memories from when I was a little kid listening to that Future World theme track, playing with the lights in the ground after the fireworks. And so... I don't know if they thought of that, or if it was kind of like, man, people really love this music, we should keep doing this. It seems to be bringing people back. Like, I don't know which order it came in, but one way or the other, it's like cemented Disney in people's minds.
That's, I haven't thought about that. And going back to what you said about how they're making memories, they are literally forcing your brain to make memories by stimulating as many senses as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're gonna remember, you know, I was on Main Street and I smelled the confectionery and I was looking at the castle and, you know, it was warm out. Like, there's four of your senses covered. Like, they've just got that no matter where you go. The smells, like, are kind of here and there because they can only pump out smells, you know, in so many places. But yeah, the soundtrack, the sights, everything is being curated exactly so you remember it. That's a lot deeper than I thought it was gonna be, but
yeah, I mean, well, that's what Disney's known for, right? It's that fine detail stuff. It's the slight incline in the Tower of Terror.
Yeah,
it's the fact that the toys in Main or in a in Toy Story Mania, that they look like toys from when Andy would have been a kid. Not just any toys. They are toys from when he was a kid. I think there's like I don't think there's a Stretch Armstrong, but there it's like toys that like my brother grew up playing with.
Right.
Because he was that same, he was the age that Toy Story was geared towards. It's those little details. That's why people keep going back to Disney. It's because they spend so much time overturning stones that, I mean, it's a completely different rock garden, effectively.
It is. God. I want to tie into that with this next thing. So you kind of talked about it already, how there was probably a time when they weren't using music in the parks at all, or if they were, it was, you know, very limited and not to the degree it's being used now. There are obviously like a bunch of parks that don't use park music. Like look at any Six Flags or, you know, like any of those smaller, not smaller, but not so theme focused parks where it's just like amusement parks with thrill rides, and they're doing fine. So why put so much emphasis on including music, and to the point where you've got, you know, you've got soundtracks playing from hidden speakers, you've got live music at some points, you've got just general ambiance playing in different areas. Like, when or like, why do you think that's something that Imagineering has shifted into putting so much focus on compared to, you know, back when?
If I were to take a guess at it, so there's an attraction in Disney's Hollywood Studios. It's called, I believe it's One Man's Dream. It's the walkthrough biography of Walt Disney and his life in the Disney company.
Yeah.
And so you go through kind of all his starts and the start of like the Silly Symphonies and his first like live action animation crossover and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of look, Disney's always had a thing with music, and like the Walt Disney Company and music have always kind of gone hand in hand.
Yeah.
Like they've never been separated at any point. And so I think the importance of music has honestly probably been a huge part of keeping the history, not just adding all these sensory experiences, but Disney is known for their music. I mean, Harmonious, the new Epcot fireworks, is about how music from around the world that Disney has incorporated into itself has changed people's lives and has really like touched people. And so like you can, I think if we look at like back from like when you and I were watching Disney movies, I can't think of like a specific song. Or actually, no, I can think of a specific song that hits like every Gen Z and like young millennial super hard. And it's the song from Hercules.
Go the Distance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's explicitly, was that made in our generation or was that more upper millennial? All I know is I've heard that song a ton. And I know people our age love it.
It came out in 97.
Okay, so like,
it was a little before us,
but like I know that one's like super popular in our generation. The Up soundtrack is actually probably a bit of a more hard hitter one, but
there's Lilo and Stitch was right about the time when we were conscious and experiencing things, and that soundtrack I have not forgotten at all.
It's playing in my head right now that we're talking about it. But and then I think you go and you look at nowadays and like the Frozen soundtrack and Moana.
Yeah.
And I think there's a new one now, but I'm not 100% sure.
Encanto?
Huh?
Encanto?
Well, isn't that one not out yet?
That's not out yet. Oh, wait, one that like just came out?
No, I mean the music thing has continued. Like,
oh, yes.
The Disney music being important to people, almost as important, if not more important than the movies themselves, is the song in them. Yeah. I was in Disney World around the time that Frozen came out. Let me tell you, it was great to hear that everybody loved the music. I heard Let It Go least 7 or 8 times a day in those parks. Being belted by like 5-year-olds and
nice,
just top of their lungs belted. It was the best time to go to Fantasia if you were a parent or a little kid. It was the worst time to go if you were not those two things. Because they did their karaoke, and guess what song was chosen almost every time?
Oh, man.
And, yeah, but, I mean, it's part of that thing. It's the You'll Be in My Heart from Tarzan. It's the...
Tarzan.
You Got a Friend in Me from Toy Story. It's all these little songs that mm-hmm. have been so important, and I think that's just resonated so much with the guest that it just makes sense that it would be everywhere else too. Mm-hmm. It's like part of the Disney DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
I just rambled on for a while.
No, you're good.
I don't know if I hit the point or not.
You definitely did. Don't worry, you did. I forgot the question that I initially asked, but you ended up somewhere great, so that's fine. But yeah, I totally agree. I think, yeah, it definitely stems from, like, at this point, whenever there's a new, you know, Disney Pixar movie, people are probably like 80% expecting it's going to be like a movie musical, and there will be the occasional musical number, and then, you know, in the off years, they'll release just a non-musical movie. But yeah, it's almost an expectation when you see that name on a movie that there's gonna be a banging soundtrack, and there will be at least one big song that everyone's gonna remember that movie by. It's just kind of built into the formula, so it would make sense that would kind of transfer over to the parks, because now you've got, you know, you can think of a ride soundtrack, and you're like, yeah, I could ramble that off right now if I wanted to. I remember that soundtrack. You know, there's Pirates, Haunted Mansion, Splash Mountain for some of the more iconic ones. But then on the other side of things, there's sound design that kind of melds more into set design, where you've got, you know, ambiance and kind of background sounds, like in Pandora.
Yeah.
And I know you have experienced this firsthand. The sound that plays is different at night than it is at day, right?
I believe so.
I think that's why
they play more, and this is kind of Animal Kingdom as a whole. And after I answer this, I do want to ask you a quick question just on the previous topic.
Okay.
But they switch from more of kind of like a active playing of music
mm-hmm.
to a little bit more mixing in like ambient wildlife sounds.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly, I might be a bit off, but I know Pandora plays a lot of ambient wildlife. I think they play mm-hmm. a little bit in the day too.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes less sense to have like people beating drums at like
right.
7 o'clock at night in
yeah.
the dark. It makes a lot more sense to have like the sound of nature kind of playing. And so,
right. Cause everyone's sleeping according to the story of the world.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And it's Animal Kingdom gets to kind of do that because of the theme of the park. I would expect that maybe to be in like the Grizzly Park area of California Adventure. I think it is a little bit that ambient
I think
wildlife.
So. Yeah.
But I wouldn't, that wouldn't make sense like in a World Showcase or a Magic Kingdom or anything. Like why? That
it'd
just
be weird.
Like
yeah.
Not, yeah. It doesn't make sense. But before we get too far away from it, I got to ask, what's the soundtrack that always, cause there's a soundtrack in my head that like when I think of Disney, like that's mm-hmm. one of the first pieces of music that pops up. Is there one for you that's like cemented in there, like this is Disney to me kind of thing?
Like a movie soundtrack or a
doesn't
or a
necessarily
park
have
thing?
To be a movie or a park. I either or.
I honestly would probably say like the Toy Story music, which it's funny because it was Pixar at the time. It wasn't even Disney, but like that's what I think of, like You Got a Friend in Me, and then just that kind of general vibe of the soundtrack there. And then I don't know why my brain always goes to Lilo and Stitch when I think Disney movie soundtracks, just because that one stuck with me the most, and I don't know, it was the least like all of the other soundtracks for the movies that were coming out at the time. But those two, I think, have that. Those are the core memories in my head for Disney soundtracks, at least in movies. And then I already said, you know, Splash Mountain area.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, not. Oh, what is it? I think it might actually be the Grizzly area in California Adventure before they did. Actually, no, it was after they did the revamp. After they redid California Adventure, during the day, there's just a nice, like, I think, acoustic guitar soundtrack that plays while you're in the Grizzly area. That's just very, you know, woodsy and outdoors. And then they just have some nature ambiance playing. That is probably my favorite area to be in if I'm just hanging out in California Adventure, just because that soundtrack is so peaceful. It's like the calmest thing you can probably hear in the whole park, maybe both parks. But yeah, that's, I don't want to ramble too much, but that's where I go when I think Disney soundtracks.
Yeah, I go immediately to Up. That's, it's a heartbreaking song, but that introduction song, well, so like the way that I proposed to my wife was, her and I have always, like, Up is one of our favorite movies, and so, like, when we were in high school, still dating, I can't remember if I went to World or Land, but I brought us back both grape soda pins that that we had on our keys, our keychain. Wow, I just, like, weirdly listed there. apologize to you listeners. But so we had these grape soda pins on our keys, and we had those, and we still have them. And then when I proposed, the box that her ring was in, I had made in a woodshop class, and then I had burnt into it a picture of Ellie and Carl's chairs, as well as a grape soda pin on the back, and then, like, "You Are My Greatest Adventure" on the inside of the box. And so, like, Up has always been something that's, like, big for us. And so, like, that soundtrack, the older I get, the more that soundtrack, like, has a special place in my heart, probably because of all the stuff tied to it, but also just because, like, it is such a good song. As heartbreaking as that scene is such a good song. I think speaks to you as you get older as well, just as you start going through life, because the song is about going through life. That and the Wall-E song that plays the
the Hello Dolly music he sings.
Yes, it's not actually made by Disney, but just for whatever reason, that song that they play always sticks with me. And when they play it when you're walking down Main Street, it's my favorite song to be played down Main Street. it's just a good old walking song. But okay, I've derailed us long enough.
Well, no, first of all, what an incredible proposal. Well done, sir. That's a well-crafted...
I'll send you pictures.
Well, I'm looking at the grape soda pin that I've got on my corkboard right here. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I remember, like, seeing it when we were living together. So I can picture it. And that's that makes sense that song would stick with you so much. Totally disregarding the fact that is probably the best 5 minutes of storytelling Disney has ever put together.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Not a single word spoken, and you get the entire 70 years of the main character's life covered.
And every bit of it too. Like every feeling of it, every high and low, and so just the way the song goes up and down. It literally goes highs, then lows, then we figure it out, goes into a steady, starts to raise again, and then plummets very quickly. hurts every single time. I still remember the tweets about how people were so mad that Disney made them cry in the first 10 minutes of a movie. But then the rest is feel good, except for, like, the very end again, when it's like this sad goodbye.
Yeah.
But it's a good sad goodbye.
It's a bittersweet.
It's a bittersweet, but it is like a... It's, they slap you in the face with some feelings and then say, "All right, this dog talks.
The dog talks. The kid is silly. Have fun.
Here's a bird. Its name is Kevin." All right, God. What's your next topic?
Let's quickly
hop back on that train.
Turning into an Up commentary podcast, which isn't the worst thing it can turn into.
It was going to happen eventually.
I need to rewatch that film. Okay. We've covered, we spent 30 minutes talking about why have music. The next is more engineering-y, and it's how have music, which is not grammar, but I'm not an English major, so leave me alone. The way Disney pumps music into the environment in the parks is a science unto itself. We've kind of talked about, you know, hidden speakers and like the honeycombs on Splash Mountain and where you can hide things, but I think it deserves to be talked about just how clever Disney has gotten with the way that music is pumped into the environment, and also why pump it in the way it is, because they could totally just have speakers, just black big boxes sitting out, and people would probably be like, that doesn't really fit in, but okay, that's fine. But they went the extra mile to say, you know, let's put a rock over this speaker, or let's turn it into a honeycomb. So the first fun part of this is, have you ever been in a Disney park and then suddenly noticed a speaker where you didn't think there was one? Like, just, you're like, oh, wow, that thing is a speaker.
I think the biggest one I always remember is Splash Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Disney has a tendency to use a lot of rocks. Animal Kingdom does this a lot.
Yeah.
To hide their stuff. It's less hidden, like, in the general park, I've noticed, because you're moving, so there's less of a need to hide it as much.
Mm-hmm.
But the, like, what's a good example? Oh, It's Tough to Be a Bug, which mm-hmm. is a theater show. Not really theater. It's a movie-ish show, 4D thing that's under the Tree of Life. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they hide their speakers kind of in, like, if I remember right, it's like it's in the tree bark. Some of them are just like painted to be like kind of in the
tree
bark.
I think so, yeah. And then
other ones are like if there's like kind of like a molehill type thing, they put it in the molehill mm-hmm. and like stuff like that. But Disney likes, I've noticed they like to use rocks a lot because rocks are great. Your eye breezes right over them. It's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Splash Mountain, though, was the first time that I really like went, oh my god, somebody put thought into this. Like, somebody spent, like, a while figuring out a mm-hmm. way to make me hear music and not yeah. know that I'm being played music.
Yeah. Yeah, they want it to feel like you're literally in a movie and that's just the soundtrack
yeah.
of what's going on in your life. I think, oddly enough, I have never been on Splash Mountain and been like, there's a speaker. I don't think, like, there are very few rides I'm on where I'm aware of where the sound is coming from or looking for it. I think it's just because that's something that my brain doesn't even register as part of the experience. It's just like, the sound is happening, which is exactly what they want you to think. But I was made aware when I went to Disney World and rode Space Mountain, I believe there aren't speakers on the train itself, right?
I don't know that, actually.
Because
I'm going to look up a picture of the ride vehicle, right?
Yeah, because it's got, like, the toboggan-style ride vehicle that Matterhorn has, and I remember riding that and thinking, like, oh, the soundtrack just kind of fades in and out every now and then as we round a corner or something, and, I'm mostly just hearing, like, the air whoosh by.
There are speakers.
There are. Okay, now I need to
yes,
look up a picture.
So I think it depends on the Space Mountain that you are on, but I believe specifically your Space Mountain.
My Space Mountain does have speakers on the car.
Yes. I don't think unless they are a little bit more hidden, I'm looking at the ones for Magic
yeah.
Kingdom right now, and they do not have them.
Yeah, because I was used to the one in Disneyland where you've got the soundtrack right next to your head the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then riding the one in Disney World, I was like, oh, this is weird. The soundtrack seems further away. And
okay,
that
so
was
you
when,
did notice a difference.
Yeah, I did notice a difference. I was like, was there, after we rode that, I asked Molly, I was like, was there a soundtrack there? And she's like, yeah, there's a soundtrack. I'm like, oh, I didn't really notice it that much. Like, it was hard to hear. Because, I mean, there was Whiplash, too. That's a different thing. but I was just like, huh, that's weird. I didn't really notice it that much. And then the next time I rode the Disneyland Space Mountain, I was like, oh, it's because the speakers are, like, right next to your head, blasting out the whole time. So no matter where you are, you're hearing it. And that's, like, a whole other topic of, you know, hiding speakers on rides. Do you put your speakers in the environment? Do you put them on the ride vehicle? Do you have it just like a as you go by? And I think the best example of that compromise is the People Mover in Magic Kingdom. There's listeners, for those of you that haven't ridden the People Mover, you should. It's a great ride and it's the only one left. But there are speakers in the ceiling all along the track for the People Mover, and they're spread out probably like, I don't know, every 15, 10 feet. And the way that the sound system works so that, you know, the people that are 20 feet behind you aren't hearing your audio is the audio is being played along the speakers at the same speed you're moving. So it sounds like, you know, the audio is just following you overhead, but really it's just each speaker is being timed at the exact right moment to play the exact right part of the soundtrack that it sounds like, you know, a soundtrack. You're being followed by, not followed, that sounds creepy. You are being accompanied by a disembodied voice that is telling you fun facts about Tomorrowland. And so that brings me to my next and probably last question on this thing, because it's been over 30 minutes.
And we have a little fun game to play.
And we do have a fun little game we need to get to, yeah. Parades. Are you a parade frequenter?
No. Depending on the parade, there was a couple parades that I would watch, because some of the, like the float engineering, which we should do a episode.
Ooh, you're right.
On parade engineering. Write that one down. Write that
I
one
am.
Down.
I'm adding it. I'm adding it.
But my mom is a huge. She loves the parades. She was specific. There was a couple parades that the ones that would go like every single night, rather than like I think there was one or two that were like just on occasion.
Yeah,
but there was some where they always seemed to be going on when we were trying to get somewhere, and moving around a Disney
classic.
Parade, folks.
Oh, it's...
I'm sure anybody who's been in the park and has been wanting to move while a parade is going, it's near impossible.
It's an Olympic sport. Yeah,
yeah. If you get stuck, you just have to suck it up and accept it. But
and watch.
No, I am not necessarily a parade watcher.
Okay, side note, have you seen the Electrical Parade?
Yes, that is one of the ones I have seen. Fantastic.
That's a good time.
Parade. It's a good parade. I like it.
It is
like
a good time.
Much.
So parades, they employ a similar thing as the People Mover, where, you know, you always are hearing the sound that's designed for the float that's in front of you. No matter where you are along the parade route, that's what you're hearing. And I was thinking, like, okay, they probably have a similar thing. Like, there are speakers hidden along Main Street, let's say, every 30 feet. And they're synced up to, you know, a show program or a show computer for the floats. But it's different because floats break down on occasion and stop. And certain floats probably get ahead. And then other ones take a little bit to catch up. And even when that's the case, I feel like, you know, every now and then that will happen and you'll be like, oh, I'm hearing the music for this float, but it's, you know, way down at the end. Usually it adjusts.
Yeah.
How is my question?
I would guess, honestly, I would guess navigation tracking. Like if I were to design a parade system that like needed to alter its music, but because you know that that all of their park music has to be hooked up to like a centralized system.
Yeah,
because
sure.
they pump announcements throughout the whole park, and they
right
the when the fireworks play, the music changes throughout the whole park, and
yeah.
so because you can hear, like, back when it was Wishes, I remember explicitly riding Big Thunder while Wishes was playing, and I
nice.
Could still hear Wishes, and so and you're far away from the castle at that point, but
right.
So they have this like centralized music system. If I were designing it, I would have navigation trackers on each of those floats and
mm-hmm.
zones in which while they were in those zones, that's the music that was playing, but it probably would have like an override of making sure that if a float's going slow, the float that is in front is being prioritized over the float that's in back, because the float in back is going to be there for longer. And
yeah.
So I would rather have the float leaving still playing the music than the float coming in taking the music away from the float that's leaving.
That's fair, yeah.
So that's how I would design it. I don't know exactly how they do it. I would be surprised if it was timed, at least if it was still timed. I'm sure that's how they used to do it, because they've had
yeah.
parades for forever.
I would imagine, yeah, it's probably a positional tracking, zones. Probably, you know, if float A is in zone 2, then play this soundtrack. If it's not there yet, then play the sound for the float before it. It's just, like, it's hard enough to conceptualize, you know, there are 100 speakers in Main Street, and you can't see any of them. And then to add on, like, there are also these trackers that are tracking, you know, the vehicle positions and relaying them back to this antenna that's hidden from you, back to a control center that's like a mile away. Like, things like that. That's the real, the Disney meat and potatoes. We're going to hide all of the technical stuff and just paint you a pretty picture.
Yeah. No, okay. That really is the huge thing that Disney is able to do really well. It's hiding that, but still having all these mechanical pieces working. It's crazy. It honestly is. It is
crazy. We're here to tell you that as engineers, even we think it's crazy. So no, don't
it's
worry.
Insane. But it's also taken 70 years to perfect. Like this That's is true. if you were to look at Disney throughout the years, this wasn't all there. Like this has been jerry-rigged and MacGyvered to the max and like iterated. Like the Disney product, like the Disney park product, is probably the like craziest physical interactive like product that has been just iterated on nonstop. Like it is an iterative product that is being given throughout the entire year over the course of like 70 years, and they have just continued to iterate it. Like it is crazy when you like think about it that way, because it's a product that they're handing out to people, but they're also constantly upgrading and constantly changing in ways that you see and ways that you don't. It's just nuts. The systems on top of systems on top of systems is
insane.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
It's the world's largest R&D project with the largest test base
on and probably one of the largest budgets.
Yeah, honestly, true. Yeah because your test subjects are funding your research.
Yeah, if I will say the Disney engineering budget is like every engineer's dream. Because really can you imagine being in like a press conference and be like, hey, I got this cool idea, and the likelihood that they're gonna say yes, here's like $1 million, is so high.
It's just like if you come in and you're like, I would like to create a robot that feeds children ice cream in a fun way, they would go, all right, well, here's $1 million, you have a year for your R&D.
Or at minimum, they'd be like, go look into that. That might be profitable. Just
They'd probably be like, see if we have anything in storage that already does that. And then we'll see if we need to make a new thing.
Just the fact that it would be talked about. Like if I came into work and was like, hey, I want a motor that feeds people. They would be like, no. No, you're
wrong
not.
Company.
Wrong
no, you don't. Company.
Meanwhile, if I went to Disney, I want a motor that feeds people. They'd be like, tell me more.
Yeah, they'd be like, interesting.
Interesting.
Go on.
Continue.
Tell me more about your hungry motor.
We gotta move on if we still are gonna have enough time.
Yeah, so we're going along with our park music topic. We're gonna attempt, and this is the technically feasible part of things, we're gonna attempt a little guessing game where I have selected a few sound bites from throughout the parks, and I am going to play a snippet of them for Alex, and he will guess where exactly that sound can be heard. So I've kind of got them in order from easiest to hardest, and by that I mean Disney World focused to Disneyland focused.
All right, yeah. So that'll do it.
So don't worry, I have to replace Innoventions loop because that's not.
Oh, that's not. Leave it in there. Just see how long it takes.
Okay, sure. And there's one that you definitely won't
and I,
get.
I won't know which one that I won't know. I don't know when it's coming. So I want the listeners to know.
That's true.
I've not seen this list at all, but we're going to see how quickly I get the Innoventions loop.
All right.
I'm going to be a little trigger happy. Okay. Listeners, we have gotten all set up. So we're going to start this now.
That took a lot. Can you, real quick, do you hear the jazz?
I hear the jazz. Excellent. The test jazz is in.
The test royalty-free jazz is a go. All right. This is the first of four tracks from all over the U.S., so two parks. Here is your first audio track. You can, I'll give you 2 seconds to start with. Are you ready?
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Okay.
That's Splash Mountain.
That's Splash Mountain. That's correct. I figured that one would be pretty easy.
That one would be fast.
That one.
Yeah, no, that's the beginning.
That is. How about that?
Oh. This is still World?
Yeah, it's both parks.
Shoot, I don't recognize that one.
That one...
How old is the ride? Is it Little Mermaid? No, they would totally do a more recognizable song.
I'm playing through an ad right now, so it's muted. I'll resume my... Okay.
Oh, it's still Splash Mountain?
It's still Splash Mountain, yeah.
I have never heard the female singing voice on Splash Mountain. No, are you sure that that's in both?
I don't think it is in both. Now that
okay, you can't do me like that.
I've never ridden the one in Disney World. Give me some slack.
Don't say they're in both.
Well, Splash Mountain is in both, but
yeah, but not.
I didn't know that part.
So okay, so was that 2 out of 4? Were both Splash Mountain?
No, that was just 1 out of 4. I just wanted to see if I threw in a different part of the ride if you'd get it. Okay.
Well, if it was Magic Kingdom, sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. So wait, is there not a part where like the mom possum is singing to her kids about...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Wait, what happens after you go down into the laughing place and there's like all the bees there's and stuff?
A spinning turtle and a bees and a vulture tells you you're going to die.
You just go straight to the vulture. Wait, do you see Brer Rabbit all tied up?
Yeah, but there's no possum.
That's weird. I'm learning something today. Yeah, there's a mother possum singing to her kids the dangers of straying from the path, and she sings that song.
No.
Okay.
No, that is not in the Magic Kingdom version. I demand a recount on that one. I got that one right.
You did get that one right. But for the record, you got that one correct. Okay.
Okay.
Here is your, I've decided to add one in because that one was so quick. Here is your your second clip. It's a little, it's related to a ride. This is only in Disneyland.
Okay, it's only in Disneyland.
And this plays before the ride.
Okay, if I were to take a guess, it would be the Grizzly one.
I'm going to play you some more audio from later.
Okay. Oh, they really play that before Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, that's when you're in the bayou.
That throws me so off.
And that's like the old man playing his banjo in his little bayou shack.
Okay. That's like okay, I'm not doing so great on these.
I mean, to be fair.
I expected better of myself.
That one was Disneyland specific again. Okay. Are you ready for number 3?
Let's go number 3. Epcot.
Where in Epcot?
I mean, it's the Interventions loop.
It's the Interventions loop.
If you keep playing that, it was the... Do-do-do. Yeah, there it is. There's the chimes. Yeah, there it's coming. Yeah.
I feel like
we're just going to marinate
demonetized if we just keep listening.
We're just going to marinate in this for a second.
We're going to let this get demonetized just so we can bathe in the Interventions loop.
Yeah, just forever. Just get a cease and desist order.
All okay. Right. Very good. That's we'll call that 2.5 out of 3.
All right.
This one, this is not something you have experienced, but I think you'll still get it. Are you ready?
Yes.
And I'm going to stop it there.
Okay, it's Rise of the Resistance.
It's actually just the Galaxy's Edge Symphonic
Suite.
Oh,
okay.
So I'll give you
I started
yeah.
hearing like the rise kind of, or like yeah. the the First Order style music, and that's what I was, okay.
It's interesting because it, like, John Williams did this, obviously, but it does not sound exactly like any other Star Wars music. It sounds a lot more Disney-like, especially with, like, yeah, the big fanfare at the beginning of everything. Because the way
yeah, the fanfare was throwing me off. It wasn't starts. Until the trumpets started going. And because you said that I wouldn't know
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Here's the beginning of this track.
Wow. Okay, doesn't yeah, we that... gotta stop before that becomes non-fair use, but...
Doesn't that sound like... That could be the beginning of, like, Fantasmic or something.
Yeah, it sounds like that. The beginning of a firework.
Yeah, doesn't it? And then, like, the rest
It's a good blend.
It is really
of
good.
Of Disney and Star Wars. I like it.
The rest of that track gets a lot more Star Wars-y, but I thought I'd grab that first one. Okay, this is your final song.
Okay.
Good luck.
That's the Monsters, Inc. ride.
Yeah, that is the Monsters, Inc. ride.
In Disneyland. You thought I wouldn't get Monsters, Inc.?
I didn't know. It's only in Disneyland.
Are you kidding? But that's just the Monsters, Inc. soundtrack.
It is just the Monsters, Inc. sound. If I wanted to be cruel, I would have picked something.
Is that Mr. Toad's?
No, that's also Monsters, Inc.
Oh, God.
It's like the Doors scene near the end of it.
There's no way. Okay, we're going to do this episode again, and I'm gonna do this on you.
I expect that's what we're gonna do. Nothing less
All Disney
than
World.
That.
Because you gave me like oh, yeah. one Disney World ride. It wasn't even a ride. It was just Epcot.
Stick with what you know, you know? I could have given you... I thought about doing the Maelstrom soundtrack from Epcot.
I might
which
have
really...
been able to get that.
But I feel like that would have just been, like, swamp sounds and, like, the crashing of ocean waves. So.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Okay, we need to get into a very quick
All right.
mouse geared.
Speed. Oh. Speedy intro. I will edit it to be fast.
I can't wait to hear Speedy mouse geared.
It's going to be nightmare fuel.
All right.
Okay.
Let's hear it. What have you cooked
here's
up?
What I'm going to do. And just like you, the intro That's... led to this. We're going to be
oh,
redoing
no.
Jungle Cruise.
Oh, no.
I feel like this is a fun one. This one. Okay. So, listeners, this is a beloved one. I understand. We're still going to treat it right. But this is a weird one. This I've noticed that. This is a weird one because it's a very, like, cast member guest interactive thing that is not very common in other rides. And so I'm going to explain what the ride is. So for those who have not ridden the Jungle Cruise was one of the original Disney rides in both Disneyland and Disney World. In the Jungle Cruise, you get on a boat, you go around this kind of like tropical jungle area. You see a lot of various sights and animatronic animals as you're being guided by a cast member tour guide that not only tells you about the area around you, but does so with a multitude and some would say way too many dad jokes. So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. There's a ton of puns that have come out of this ride. There is now a movie that has come out of this ride. And it's probably one of the, like, biggest favorites in Magic Kingdom. Like, for some people, this is, like, their ride that they go on. They have memorized the script, they have heard all the jokes 1,000 times. The cast members that work this ride, I have a feeling, either love it or hate it because they have to say all these jokes. But
yes,
I have seen cast members on their last day do every single joke on their script.
Jeez.
And it is amazing. They do not stop talking. But
perfect.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites in Magic Kingdom. I really like the Jungle Cruise, and Disneyland does the Jingle Cruise during Christmas, don't they?
Yeah, that's true.
Or do both of them do that?
I think both do.
I would assume
they both
it's
do.
Just
yeah,
Christmas decorated. But it's fun. So did I give you enough time?
I think so. You gave me enough time to think of two directions to take it. Okay. Part of me wants to kind of reskin it and embrace the whole, like, jungle, outdoorsy adventurer kind of vibe. The Jungle Cruise in, it's Hong Kong or Tokyo or Beijing. It's one of the Asian parks, of course. The Jungle Cruise there has like a massive temple scene with like, you know, a hidden treasure subplot line and like a curse at some point. I almost want to re-theme it, or not re-theme, like reskin it and just really lean into that and add a lot more kind of set pieces like that. But then the other part of me wants to take it in a very chaotic direction and do Meet the Robinsons is Disney, right? Yeah.
Yes, isn't it? The one where they travel to the future?
Yes, but give me a second. Okay.
Oh my.
I'm ignoring the surrounding land. You know, I'm not thinking about that right now. A canal-style boat ride through the inventing rooms of the mansion from Meet the Robinsons with all kinds of, like, different animals that and, like, creations of... What's his name?
It's Will Robinson.
It's Will. Yeah, he changes his name to Cornelius, doesn't he? But it's Lewis. He's the blonde kid, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
I
yeah.
I'm thinking of the wrong Robinson.
Well, because Wilbur is the kid with the black hair, and is Lewis's eventual son. Wait, no. Yes.
Yes, it's Lewis. Will Lewis. Robinson, I think, is from the space movie. The Danger what? Will Robinson.
Hold on.
Yeah, I went off the plot. There's a different Robinson.
Lost in Space. From Lost in Space. Okay.
Yeah, I went that route. My bad.
Anywho. I was thinking of the animated film Meet the Robinsons.
No, yeah. I was too. I just got the names mixed up.
Okay, but I'm picturing still a guided boat tour, but it is through the canals inside this massive greenhouse/inventing room of Lewis Robinson. I don't know, time travel's complicated. But kind of like Mystic Manor, where you've got a bunch of just like mishaps happening, but also you've got lots of dad jokes and you've still got like, you know, we work at the Robinson Museum or the Robinson Institute or something like that, and we're touring people throughout and still embracing the kind of silly side of things, and you've got like, oh, here's this thing that he invented at this time and there's a time machine and there's all that. I would like to see, if you're gonna change it, go full 180 and make it an indoor boat ride that has the feeling of like a Living with the Land greenhouse kind of tour indoors, but research inventing crazy gizmos and gadgets, and that's where my brain dead ends. What would you do?
I will say I like that. I like just flipping the 180 on them. I think that would be cool to do like a futuristic greenhouse, or maybe not even futuristic, but like a greenhouse of just like crazy botanical inventions. I think that would be really cool. Okay, so my hard thing with the Jungle Cruise is, since watching like Imagineering Story, my respect for that ride has gone up a ton and its legacy. So I kind of had two ways that I went about this, and so I'm gonna start out with the boring one, and
okay.
And it's, I think Jungle Cruise has not been touched due to its reverence, but I think because of that it's not suffered, but you know Walt Disney would be like, nope, tear it down, rebuild it. Rebuild it with the new technology. And so I would love to see today's animatronics and today's technology used in that ride. As well as like they've done a really good job. I feel like there was some humor in the Jungle Cruise that has slowly been removed from the Jungle Cruise because it was kind of problematic. Which was like a good call by Disney. I don't mean to bring that up. I feel like I've brought that up a couple episodes now, but
what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. It is what happened. Even Disney's talked about it. No one likes thinking about that, but I mean, it was the way of the world, and it's a good thing that it's changing now, because that's not how the world should be. Uh-huh. And so that's all I'm gonna say about that. But I think the whole ride could use some sprucing up, some polishing and changing the animatronics, fully rooting out that kind of stuff, and like fully just giving it a full facelift, because it's an old ride. It's been there for a long time.
A real old ride, yeah. So kind of like, what, like, are you thinking of going so far as like the Navi River Journey style of, you know, ambiance that. Decoration.
Yeah, I think not mystical, obviously, but
right, but that I like the technology used
with the tech that we have, like, so the whole point of the Jungle Cruise was people weren't really able to travel back then like we can now, and I think even now this still holds true. Like not everybody's going around traveling the world as much as that would be awesome. That's just not the reality of how the majority of people in America and people in the world live. And so the Jungle Cruise's original purpose was to give those people who can't travel around the world, which back then it was a very large majority, if not like the entirety of the U.S.
Yeah.
And now it's still a majority of the U.S. It was to give them a viewport into what the outside world looked like. And so I think using today's technology, we could like take that to the next level, add climate effects, little bit more indigenous life that we could replicate or mm-hmm. alter just with our advances in like plant genetic alteration mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You can take some plants from like Eastern Asia and from the rainforest and stuff like that and use it as an opportunity to maybe preserve some of these species, but have them be genetically altered to operate in the Florida climate and the Anaheim climate.
Mm-hmm.
But just a couple things like that. That's my boring idea, is to really just give the thing a facelift and get it going.
Like a mix, like with living it, like kind of like a living with the land type of preservation angle, as well as the River Journey technology. Like,
yeah.
All meeting together. Okay. Yeah, I like
that's kind of what I'm thinking. The other idea is a little bit more out there. I don't know if you ever watched the movie Brother Bear.
Oh, I did watch the movie Brother Bear. It's from when we were kids.
It used to be one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I would love... It's one of those, like, Disney under the rugs kind of thing for whatever reason. Like, people just didn't...
Yeah.
Didn't like that movie. I'm not fully sure why. If there's a reason, and if it's a really good reason, I'm sorry. I haven't watched it in a while, so
I have fond memories of it.
I have super
yeah.
fond memories of it, and so I would love to kind of like retheme it, still up the animatronics and everything, and really like upgrade it, but have it be like you going through their journey together as well.
Yeah.
And like having that be a back, because right now there's no story. You're just kind of going around. And so I think it could be really cool, especially given the fact that like Brother Bear is set, I believe, in North America, right? I'm not
crazy.
I think
so, yeah.
They're yeah. grizzly bears, so or they're brown bears, but
yeah,
maybe
they're brother bears actually. Oh, but
got him. Yeah, that was a good one though. But
thank you.
Yeah, I think that would just be a fun way to like integrate that into the Disney parks, because I that was a really cool story, and I think it also showed a neat side of now again, it's been a while since I've seen the movie, so if I'm about to say something and it's really not okay, I am so sorry. I should probably watch the movie again, but I do remember it introduced some aspects of like Native American culture that were really cool, and I remember being positive. And so it would just be cool to kind of start and like add some of that into Adventureland. Like that's just not really represented right now in Adventureland. So I thought same yeah. basic ride, just reskinned over to Brother Bear was what I was thinking.
I like that. I think because I know in California Adventure in Disneyland, they had the like Brother Bear. There was like I don't know if it's still there, like an interactive cave in like the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail where you'd go in and you'd put your hand on a thing and it would tell you your spirit animal, which is, you know, not great. That's probably why they closed it. If it is closed, I don't even know. But that's like the most representation Brother Bear has or had in the parks. And I think that would be good to have, because I think especially since Adventureland and Frontierland are so close to each other, that seems like a great combo of the two, where you've got like, oh, this American frontier, it's, you know, the Northwest, unexplored, just all natural, like redwoods and things like that, plus, you know, the exploration of Jungle Cruise. Would it still be a guided tour? Like, would there still be a person steering your craft?
I think you almost, that, and that's where, like, I like the idea of, like, turning it into, like, more, like, revamp, like, fully, like, bringing up Walt Disney's vision of, like, we're gonna make this as immersive as possible, like, mm-hmm. bring in humid fog and, like, all that kind of stuff. Like,
oh, yeah.
Doing that, I like better, because mm-hmm. You can't lose the backside of water jokes and the all that kind of stuff. Like, that's so quintessential to Jungle Cruise and something you don't really get around Magic Kingdom as much. And so, yeah. Like, I think you have to still have it guided, but I don't really know what that would look like if it was, like, a fully themed Disney IP ride. Like, I don't know how that would... It doesn't fit as well, in my opinion. So, that's... It was two ideas. One was a little bit more out there and less liked. One was pretty much just do it again.
Yeah.
And so I figured I should say both.
I like this. We're getting to the point where we're doing some of the heavy hitters for Mouse Geared, and it's showing, which is good for us.
We're not just wiping things to the floor and restarting, yeah. because, like, so I just so that we address this to the listeners, like, we're not coming out here, like, as experts. Like, we're both super young in the industry and still learning a lot in our jobs and as engineers. Mm-hmm. This truly is just us kind of scratching that itch of what we both dreamed about doing since we were little kids. And mm-hmm. it's honestly, for me at least, and from what you and I have talked about off the podcast, I think this strikes for you as well. It's been really humbling. Like, there's been a few where we've been like, oh, we're knocking this out of the park, like Smorg and Smorg. Stuff like that. But like you go to the Vault of the Unseen, and I really like what we came up with, but it gives you, it's a humbling thing and a very introspective thing to be like, to look at what they did and then try and say to yourself, even in concept, I'm gonna try to beat this. And
yeah.
Sometimes it's like the idea well just is dry.
Yeah.
And because they did a lot of people put their hands in these things, and a lot of like genius went into these rides, both in ingenuity and concept and everything. Like Tower of Terror last week was a perfect example of that. I still don't know what to do with that.
I don't know what else I would have done if I hadn't come up with it and had time to think about it. But yeah, it's the design process is the most ambiguous and most important part of, I think, being an Imagineer is, you know, the ideas that you come up with, doesn't matter if they're good or bad, as long as you are constantly coming up with ideas, that's what keeps you moving. And I think this is just a great exercise for us in that, because in our day-to-day work, we're not exactly chucking out novel ideas every hour. As engineers doing regular engineer stuff, it's very like standardized and controlled, and all the work we do is, you know, designed to be predictable. So this is, like you said, a great way for us to scratch that itch and flex some different muscles.
Yeah, and not saying that Imagineers aren't doing like the same kind of work that we're doing.
They're doing
like,
that too.
It's not every day as an Imagineer, I'm sure, is designing a zany theme park ride. Like, there's still going to be times where you're designing you're figuring out how the water lines are going to run to the drinking fountain. Like, every job has its boring stuff, but the stuff that they're able to do because of the industry that they're in is the reason why Noah and I have such a respect for them. And
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all done out of respect.
Yeah. And with that, I think it's time to wrap up this episode. This has been a good one. Music is a very tough topic to nail down.
It's a rich vein. It's a rich vein of stuff. We'll have to do another one on this. I don't know if we'll necessarily be a part two, but I at least want a chance to
see. Yeah, you need your chance.
And just because I looked like a real
you look like someone there. That went to Disney World more than Disneyland, so that's okay. Look, I didn't want you to get everything right. But yeah, I also swung too far in the other direction. So.
We should just do an entire episode where you and I have like 15, you have 15, and we see who can get the best, get the best score out of 15.
All right, there's your music episode follow-up, everyone. Yeah,
there's the next one.
There you go.
The next one.
All right, well, thank you all so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram at Main Street Mechies. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we will absolutely give you a shout-out, possibly in the end of episode Mickey voice that we don't really address, but
That is a promise. If you make it a paragraph long, though...
No. Then we still have to do it.
So here's the thing. If it's, like, way too long, then you get my Donald Duck voice, which is terrible.
Oh man. I'll do it at
the end of this episode. You will never want to hear it again.
You heard it first, folks. If you leave a 5-star review, and only 5-star reviews get this, you will get the coveted Donald Duck voice.
I will do the entire thing in the Donald Duck voice, and then we probably won't be able to record an episode because my throat will be damaged.
And then we'll have a week for you to recover, so that'll be fine. Okay, but thank you all so much for listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We appreciate you listening and interacting with us on social media and on all these podcast apps. It means the world to us that you're even here listening to us on your commute or while you're doing housework or whatever it may be. But thank you from the bottom of our hearts for giving us your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. And hope you all have a magical day, and I'm going to resign to my fate.
Oh, wow.